Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Oregon Justice Resource Center Women's Justice Project has released a report titled Death by a Thousand Cuts, Volume 2, on conditions at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, Oregon's only women's prison. Volume 1, released in 2023, outlined the long-standing serious problems and entrenched toxic culture at Coffee Creek, and despite actions and rhetoric by the Oregon Department of Corrections and the Governor's Office, the adults in custody at Coffee Creek report little to no improvements have been made. On May 1st, 2024, Oregon Justice Resource Center called on Oregon Governor Kotek to declare a state of emergency at Coffee Creek to immediately address the significant issues and human suffering at the prison. With me to discuss the reports from Oregon Justice Resource Center Women's Justice Project are Sarah Berry, staff attorney, and Julia Yashimoto, senior advisor and director of the Women's Justice Project. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
So, Sarah, Julia, there are a few reports, Volume 1 and 2 of Death by a Thousand Cuts, and those reports actually amplify voices of the woman at Coffee Creek about concerns at the prison. And then there's the GIPA report that was done at Coffee Creek, and that's a gender-informed practices assessment of the prison. And that report states that nearly all Coffee Creek operations, systems, and services are dysfunctional and failing. Sarah, let's talk first about the report you authored, Death by a Thousand Cuts, Volume 2.
So when we first launched the Death by a Thousand Cuts report series last summer, we envisioned it as a series because we knew that this was going to be an issue that we wanted to continue bringing attention to the conditions at Coffee Creek and make sure that we were continuing to amplify the voices of people incarcerated there. And so we knew there was going to be a volume two at some point, and we've been, you know, continuing to monitor the conditions there. And then after the GIPA came out, we were hearing about the ways in which the GIPA report and the response to the report was shaping the conditions inside Coffee Creek. And we were also hearing that things were not improving, and in some ways conditions were worsening as a result of some backlash related to the GIPA by prison staff. And so the conditions that we were hearing about in many ways were a continuation of the sort of things we talked about regarding Volume 1. It kind of goes back to why we chose the title, Death by a Thousand Cuts, which is that it is hard to convey the impact of what it's like to live at Coffee Creek from any one anecdote. But it's when you hear different stories about daily life there, you start to comprehend and starts to come to life the ways in which all of these different aspects of life there culminate into a really dehumanizing and harmful experience. And so it's everything from the food. We've heard reports of people being served spoiled and rotten food. The medical care is extremely inadequate. So we were hearing reports, people waiting very long times for appointments, waiting months to go out to see a specialist that they need to see, being told that they need to go treat their conditions by buying things from canteen. And so this kind of thing leads minor issues that could be treated into developing into an emergency. And sometimes that's the only way people are able to get the attention of medical staff, is that it becomes an emergency. There's this ongoing problem of sexual assault and abuse within the facility. We were hearing that lockdowns, frequent lockdowns, have continued. And then in some cases that has increased, where in the wake of the GIPA, there was a lot of reports that some staff were not happy about the GIPA and felt that incarcerated women were breaking some sort of code of silence within the facility by talking to GIPA assessors or sharing information about the facility with the outside world, and that women were referred to as rats. There was some sort of veiled intimidation by things like women would see rats posted on the walls and wonder what that was about. And then we heard reports that it seemed like officers were just sort of flexing their authority in the wake of the GIPA to show that they were still in charge. And so they would do things like sell people in more often. We were just hearing this is happening a lot for minor things or for no reason, that just because officers wanted to show that we're still in charge. Yeah, another thing I wanted to highlight in the report was that last December we were hearing really alarming reports about the physical condition of the facility. So in Coffee Creek, there's a minimum security side and a medium security side. And some of the things we've heard about the structure are longstanding problems. And in some cases, they're things that have been going on for a long time, but we're just now hearing about really the extent of it, or have been hearing about it more recently. So things like the plumbing backs up frequently, sewage will leak into people's cells and create horrible odors. And then last December, we were hearing that on the minimum side, the roof was leaking, and that the water damage from water coming in through the roof over time had become so bad that parts of the ceiling caved in over people's bunk area where people sleep. Unfortunately, no one was in the bunk at the time, but we were hearing that pieces of the ceiling had fallen down and revealing a lot of rot and black mold underneath, and that there was black mold in some of the housing units that was making people sick. Really, just a lot of details that are alarming and demonstrate that the building itself is not really a habitable place to live.
I think I would add regarding the long-standing problems with the infrastructure at Coffee Creek. I think it's pretty telling that over the years of us working with women pretty regularly at Coffee Creek, we did not hear about these problems like the black mold and the sewage and those types of conditions because it just became something normal for people to live with. And they just felt that nobody would do anything about it anyway. And so after the letter came out of the letter that was written by an adult in custody at Coffee Creek regarding the ceilings leaking from the heavy rains, we started inquiring more about other infrastructure problems. And that's when these other issues about the infrastructure started coming to light. But what was commonly said was, oh, this is how it always is. This is just what it's like to live here at Coffee Creek. I would probably add on the lockdowns are a significant problem for people at Coffee Creek, and they are becoming more frequent. The lockdowns are happening for longer periods of time, and to be locked down means that you are confined either to your cell or to your living unit for majority of the day. From what we're hearing, it has a lot to do with staffing shortages, and so units will just go on lockdown without any notice and for an indefinite amount of time.
And there's a lot more in volume two, this report. It also talks about the women are actually getting sick from the 3-year-old food that has expired, that they are being fed at the prison, from the black mold, from the standing water.
Yeah. Oh, so one of the things that comes to mind was around the holidays. I heard a report that several women were made sick by the Christmas dinner because they were served turkey that had gone bad, that reportedly it looked a little off or it was gray. And so some people were not eating it, but some people ate it. And then that evening and the next morning, a lot of people were going into medical. And in some cases, that illness was serious because if someone has like an underlying medical issue, then getting food poisoning can be dangerous. And there was another report that on Christmas Day for the sack lunch, it included pears that had black spots and were oozing. So just visibly rotting food, where it kind of defies explanation why you would think it's okay to serve that to somebody. It wasn't just on Christmas, but we've also heard many different reports about people being served spoiled lunch meat, slimy meat that's clearly gone bad. One woman sent us a label, which is in the report, of meat that they were putting in beef stew that had expired years prior. So it's a regular occurrence, and it is making people sick. And then with the black mold, we were hearing a lot of reports about people having respiratory issues around the time that we were hearing that the ceiling caved in. from exposure to the black mold. And then we've also heard that there's black mold in other areas like the showers and the kitchen.
So, Julia, let's go back to the GIPA report. Now, that really was a scathing report about Coffee Creek Prison and basically said it pretty much should be shut down and is uninhabitable for human life.
The GIPA report was, or the GIPA, which is a gender-informed practices assessment, was commissioned by the state. It was funded by the state legislature, and it was an assessment done by outside organizations that have a specialty in understanding gender-informed practices and correction settings. And the report came out in August of 2023. And what the assessors did was they broke down the facility and its operations into 12 different domains. And to summarize the results, after doing surveys with adults in custody, talking to staff, looking at various documentation, when I read the report and what I believe the report says is that every single domain, every sort of aspect of living at Coffee Creek and the operations, the systems involved are dysfunctional, are creating harm of various sorts, are having an impact not only on the adults in custody, but also on the staff. And in turn, that is all rippling out into our communities because of the way that the staff and the adults in custody are being treated. That impacts the communities that either the staff go home to every day or that adults in custody are returning to. And in the GIPA report, they do use language like certain aspects of the systems and operations at Coffee Creek are not human-centered, are not trauma-informed, are not gender-informed. And when you're using language like these systems or this aspect of living at Coffee Creek is not human-centered, it does, I think, or it should raise a lot of red flags about how we're treating people who are in custody at Coffee Creek.
Governor Kotek did read the report and called it sobering. So talk about the steps that Governor Kotek took after reading the GIPA report.
Following the GIPA report, Governor Tina Kotek announced that she would assemble an advisory panel on the gender-responsive practices and corrections. And so basically an advisory panel to help implement or respond to the GIPA report and implement the GIPA report's recommendations. And since that advisory panel was put together, we have not seen very much else from the governor's office. There is work happening on these advisory panels, and we do know about activities and actions happening within Department of Corrections to also create their own committees to respond to the GIPA report and to the GIPA recommendations. But what we're hearing from people who are incarcerated at Coffee Creek, as well as staff who are incarcerated there, there's really not been much productive work happening within the prisons. Sarah serves on the governor's advisory panel and can speak more to the advisory panel.
The advisory panel meets once a month, and it includes stakeholders from different subject areas. And then the Department of Corrections is involved. So in addition to the monthly meetings, there are several topical work groups that meet more regularly to discuss the problems in the GIPA report and then try to develop some recommendations for the changes that should be made going forward. And so I think it sort of remains to be seen what kind of impact the advisory panel will have. I think it has a lot of potential because there are good ideas being discussed, and there is a fair amount of energy to make real changes, not just little tweaks here and there, and not just paying lip service. And so within, you know, my role as representing the Oregon Justice Resource Center, I'm trying to play a part in making sure that the focus stays on what kind of changes are going to have a real impact. And rather than just making a recommendation and leaving it to the Department of Corrections and hoping that they do it, or leaving it to their own internal workings and hoping that they are serious as they say. So it remains to be seen, but I am hopeful.
Governor Kotek also directed the Department of Corrections to come up with some actions. The Department of Corrections did come up with a list of recommendations, which you found extremely disappointing. Can you talk about that letter from the ODOC to Governor Kotek?
We found the response that the Oregon Department of Corrections had to what they called low-hanging fruit or changes that they could make immediately that had low cost or was not resource intensive. And we found these recommendations or ideas to be incredibly disappointing, not only staff here at the Oregon Justice Resource Center, but the people that we talked to who are in custody at Poppy Creek. They are very superficial changes. A lot of the people we spoke with at Coffee Creek talked about how a lot of these things were already in the works or already existed at Coffee Creek. They just found them very disappointing because they were primarily created by Coffee Creek staff. And in addition to Coffee Creek creating these committees of staff to respond to the Gipper report, they also brought together an AIC or Adult in Custody Council. The AICs who participated in this GIPA council thought that they were going to have some sort of say or some sort of voice in what the recommendations were. And none of these sort of low-hanging fruit recommendations included the things that they suggested. In response to this letter from the Oregon Department of Corrections to Governor Kotek with their ideas of immediate changes that could be put into place, we provided a letter to Governor Kotek with our own recommendations sourced from adults in custody, as well as some of our formerly incarcerated staff who have served a number of years at Coffee Creek, that we believed were much more meaningful changes. In comparison, the recommendations made by the Oregon Department of Corrections had a lot to do with sort of, like I had said, superficial changes, adding certain programs or of starting the process of putting their staff into different trainings, having an increase in peer-led programs and classes. And it's not to minimize any of the changes that existed, the impact of those things. But the things that we talked to people about and the recommendations that we made were far more substantive and meaningful. So, for example, one of the things that the GIPA report talked about is the paramilitary culture that exists in the prisons and how harmful and dehumanizing this paramilitary structure is. One of the recommendations that many adults in custody suggested to us was to eliminate the military titles for staff. So right now, staff use titles like corporal, lieutenant, captain. So to just stop using that language within Coffee Creek and the impact that that will have. Changing the uniforms for officers. So at one time, it was more common for officers to be in gray polo shirts. Now what adults in custody are reporting, they're seeing people in more law enforcement style uniforms. So things like that, that can really get at the paramilitary culture and starting to change that. Ending the use of solitary confinement. Solitary confinement was found by the GIPA report to be incredibly harmful to adults in custody, and the way in which Coffee Creek and the Department of Corrections was using solitary confinement to be very harmful. And this is something that the Department of Corrections can end on its own. It's not something that's in statute that they have to wait for the legislature to change. They can end solitary confinement now. We suggested in our letter things like if they're not going to change solitary confinement, to get rid of these three cages that they have in the solitary confinement unit in which they use to hold people for people to decompress. They use these three cages they put people in here waiting for them to decompress. They could stop using a tether to move people from different parts of the special housing unit. That's what solitary confinement can be called, is a special housing unit. We talked about and recommended things like immediately changing the way they discipline individuals. And so our formerly incarcerated staff who served time at the old women's prison and then at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility talked about how in the old women's prison, discipline could look something like having to clean certain areas or having to write an essay in response to their actions. Now things are much more punitive, where people are looking at sell-ins and segregation. And all of these disciplinary policies are things that the Department of Corrections can change immediately. And so we just have a number of examples that we got from adults in custody that are far more substantive. It's our recommendations that we got from them that are going to have more of an impact than the more superficial suggestions made by the Department of Corrections.
The women at Coffee Creek wrote their own letter to Governor Kotick. Can you talk about the letter from the women?
So several women at Coffee Creek wrote a letter to the governor in December of last year, asking her to pay attention to some of the conditions going on there and to take action. And they discussed the state of the roof on the minimum security building. They described the extreme state of disrepair, the ceiling tiles collapsing onto prisoners' bunks. They described the strong smell of mold on some of the units, the fact that people with medical conditions or older people with compromised immune systems were especially suffering from exposure to the mold. And they really did a great job of kind of encompassing a lot of the details of the problems within the physical facility and the many issues that need to be addressed. And some of the other things that they highlighted are the state of the heating and cooling systems, which are out of date. And so the workers will use parts that don't fit with the systems because they're so old. And so there are systems that need to be entirely replaced. It just results in people experiencing extremes in heat and cold.
My understanding for this letter is that this was written in response to the heavy rains that were happening in December of last year. And the women who live in these minimum housing units, they have for a long time known that there were infrastructure problems on the living units, so including the poor quality and deterioration of the roof and regular leaking within in the buildings and problems with the HVAC system. So Coffee Creek is constantly incredibly hot in the summertime and very cold in the wintertime. And with the heavy rains that came, all of these problems were just exacerbated. And I think that that's what the women were trying to highlight for the governor is, look, these things are now at sort of a crisis point for our living situation. We have water just dripping and leaking through the roofs of being caught in these laundry bins, being caught in trash cans. We have black mold. There are individuals going to medical services on a regular basis because of respiratory problems that they're facing. And I think trying to highlight for the governor in what I think is a very short, succinct, clear letter to the governor about just how dire the living units are for people, at least on the minimum security side. We have heard similarly on the medium security side that it has its own infrastructure problems that impact people's daily living. But this was really a call to the governor to say this is something that you can't ignore anymore.
And did the governor respond?
As far as we know, the governor did not respond. This is one of the things that's very troubling to us and troubling to the people who are incarcerated at Coffee Creek is that other than convening the advisory panel, we have heard little to nothing from the governor about the conditions at Coffee Creek. And organizationally, we have been trying to highlight for the governor, sending her these letters, explaining to her staff, and trying to highlight that things are actually getting worse. And if you listen to what the Department of Corrections is saying, they too are suggesting that things are getting worse. Things are not actually getting better. Yes, there might be these superficial changes, like people now have mirrors on the living unit or scales to weigh themselves, or they're looking into getting shoes that fit people properly. But the Department of Corrections is regularly talking about their staffing shortages. We are regularly hearing from adults in custody about the very horrific and dire situation of medical services. We are talking to medical providers on the outside that provide specialty care for adults in custody that they're not able to see their patients. Appointments are months overdue. If the governor believed that this was a sobering report of the GIPA assessors at the time, things are actually worse. We are not being hyperbolic. We are just reporting what we're hearing from the adults in custody at Coffee Creek. I would say we've seen no response from the governor's office except for the convening of the advisory panel.
On May 1st, the Women's Justice Project sent another letter to Governor Kotek.
So to highlight for the governor just how extreme these situations are and what a comparable response would be and a responsible response to the conditions at Coffee Creek would be, we suggested to the governor that she declare a state of emergency. This will allow for the governor to take charge of the situation, to meet the harms and to redress the harms that are currently going on in a way that I think is more comparable to what's actually happening. And I think what we're trying to highlight for the governor is you have this power to declare a state of emergency. Things at Coffee Creek are of such a nature that this is the responsible response to what's going on. Declare a state of emergency.
I just wanted to add that one of the things that I've heard a lot is that the lack of a meaningful response to some of the serious problems and the things that were identified in the GIPA, like the excessively punitive culture, abuse by staff, and so on. For a lot of people, it feels like adding insult to injury that there hasn't been a more meaningful response or really any change to that. And I've heard people expressing that we feel like the officers can treat us however they want, and it doesn't matter. There's nowhere we can turn or nothing we can do to change it. And so they can continue to treat us in this dehumanizing way, and we feel like there's no accountability for it.
One of the reasons that we wrote the letter for the state of emergency is because we think that that's the appropriate response to the conditions at Coffee Creek now. And what we know about advisory panels, work groups, task forces is oftentimes these groups are convened as a way to provide some sort of political cover for whoever the governmental body is that's convening them to show that something is being done about it, where the actuality of these types of groups convening is it's just a way to buy time without really making any meaningful changes. This advisory panel has come together, and there are members on this advisory panel that are very committed to real recommendations, real change at Coffee Creek, but the advisory panel members are not being given any sort of commitment from the governor that any of these recommendations are going to be implemented. And honestly, the only way that these recommendations have a long-term meaningful impact is if they are policy changes that are put in statute. What we need from the governor is a commitment that in 2025, there is going to be an omnibus bill for policy changes, not just budgetary changes for DOC or budgetary items or increase in money that the department is receiving, but that there's a commitment for an omnibus bill that includes policy changes. Changes in statute that come from the recommendations of the advisory panel.
So what can our listeners do?
It would be helpful for people to contact the governor's office, let the governor know that this is an issue area that people really care about. Right now, it's unclear that there's enough pressure being put on the governor. I think it's easy for state officials to disregard conditions for people who are incarcerated and think that we don't have to treat them and that the community doesn't expect them to be treated with any sort of dignity or with a sense of humanity. And so I think it'd be really important for listeners who care about this issue to contact the governor's office and let the governor know that this should be and has to be a priority for her in 2025. There is a real opportunity here for this state. This GIPA report is like a gift. This is like the first and only assessment that we know of an entire institution about its workings, its operations, its treatment of people in custody. And so there's a moment here for the state of Oregon to act to make sure that people in its custody are being properly cared for. And when this moment passes, I don't know when we're going to get this opportunity again.